Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. 'Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything
hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven, and they could be found on the web at hugsfromheaven.com. Hugs is spelled H-U-G-Z. Tonight's guest is Dr. Julia Asante, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, friend. And, you know, I'd like to bring up a topic that I know that you'll be interested in, and that is, as our listeners know, we're very involved in mediumship. Mediumship is certainly one of the forms of evidence that we survive our physical death. We also conduct a medium certification program. And what we've been noticing is that there seems to be a trend, which might be considered to be a disturbing trend, of many, many people who contact us and they tell us that they, well, first they want to know if we train mediums, and they want to, and then they tell us that they were meant to be a medium and they want to start to be a medium. And this usually is prompted either by a friend telling them that they're intuitive or watching a TV show and they resonate with the medium that's on the TV show, so they figure that, you know, they were meant to do it. I've also seen, for whatever reason, a lot of people go to mediums, and it's quite common for a medium to tell a sitter that they are intuitive, and that they perhaps, you know, have the ability, and then people interpret that as, oh, now I'm a medium. Now, I know you've seen this.
I see it over and over again. I get telephone calls daily on it. I get emails. It's growing, and it's growing way out of proportion, because if everybody who called here and everybody who sent these emails and everybody who was told by a medium, oh, you're psychic, actually became a medium, we'd all be doing what we're supposed to be doing, which is gleaning information from the other side.
Yeah, and what it boils down to is if you've listened to the show for the past 6 years, you know that we constantly talk about evidence of an afterlife, evidence that we're more than our physical bodies, and we talk about a whole range of subjects, including mediumship. But you also know from listening to the show that a very large percentage of the population has had afterlife encounters, whether you want to call it afterlife encounter or an after-death communication.
Or even a sign.
A sign. It's communication, you know, with spirit. And the fact of the matter is that we're all designed, or we all have the ability to have our own communication. So when you have an experience, which sometimes can be remarkable and life-changing and very exciting, that does not necessarily mean that you were meant to be a medium. It's the same as our other senses. It's just something that we're able to do.
I'm going to go back to my piano analogy. You know, I could sit and I could play a wonderful tune on the piano and people will clap and cheer and say how fabulous it was, but it doesn't mean that I should go on to become a grand concert pianist.
Yeah, and I think that it is very titillating for people to have an intuitive experience. It's something that a lot of people consider to be out of the ordinary, and what happens, it's exciting. And people have a tendency to go a little overboard with it. Instead of letting it run its natural path and working with it and trying to develop your own lines of communication.
Or reading about it.
Reading about it, you know. And I mean, we've even had people that'll call us and say, well, I just saw, you know, a medium in TV, and she has a lot of the same, phobias or characteristics that I go through, and I feel that she's talking to me, and I'm meant to be a medium, so what do I do now? You know, we have enough on our plate. We do not have the capabilities, nor do we want to be in a position of offering mediumship development courses.
And just to go a little further with that, not only do we not want to go there, but I think that people who do offer mediumship development courses have the moral obligation to at least tune in from their own perspective to help guide this person on a spiritual journey of learning how to do this for whatever purposes they were meant to do it. Not necessarily, oh, let me go out and help people. You know, I want to help people. I want to do things for people. Bottom line is, we should all be helping people, not by mediumship, but just out of clear kindness. What happened to people holding doors open for other people? You know, simple, want to help people? Go out there and be nice to everybody. You're helping people. You don't have to become a medium to do that.
Yeah, and mediumship, we have to also bear in mind, is a very serious business. I mean,
absolutely.
Mediums are in an unbelievably important and delicate situation where they're sitting with bereaved people who are desperate.
Right. Delicate is an absolute perfect word for that, because you are sitting with a person who can easily go in either direction.
It's true. And, you know, as I've even mentioned that, and we had a wonderful event last night, the 12-12-12 event. I wanted to thank all four certified mediums that took place in that. And we had
fabulous event.
And the mediums were very evidential. But I find myself cringing, and I'm forced to stay in there. I mean, I was, because I was helping out last night. But if I don't have to help out, I don't like to be in the same room. And why? It's not because I don't trust the mediums. We've certified them, and I know they're all, you know, honest and evidential. I just feel the pressure in the room. I feel the hopelessness of some people that are there, and the desperate nature of being there. And, you know, mediums are not 100%. They can't be. They're human, and the information is not a direct line to the spirit world. It's a lot of it is interpretation. And my worst fear is that somebody who's on the fence and teetering on hopelessness, and maybe there's an afterlife and maybe there's not, and they go to a medium and they get a terrible reading, well, maybe the medium's off, or they go to a medium that's not qualified, and then they walk away in worse shape than when they went in. That's certainly
right. And it is the same thing with groups. I mean, that was a very large group that we had last night. And our obligation in the office, when people call and they ask about the group, is to kind of find out if this is a person who's still dealing with a deep amount of grief. We suggest they not go into a group, because it's the same thing. You walk out feeling worse than when you walked in if you're one of the people who didn't get a reading.
Yeah, that's true, and that's not a place for you when the grief is raw. Because let's face it, when you walk in, you don't care how many people are there, whether it's 200 or 2,000 or 10, a lot of people believe that the bond of love that you had with your loved one on the other side was so strong that there's no way that they could not come through.
Right, absolutely.
They have to come through. But there's all the other people in the room had the same bonds of love.
Right, you know? And only X number of people can get read in 4 hours.
Right.
So, you know, it's a numbers game that has a lot of unknowns that science is just delving into now.
Right.
So we have to offer our support to the research and help work out and learn about this on the level that we can all benefit from.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a wonderful guest, Dr. Julia Asante, who wrote a book called The Last Frontier, and it's all about exploring the afterlife. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
In grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Julia Asante. Our sponsor is Hugs from Heaven, and they can be found on the web at hugsfromheaven.com. Hugs is spelled H-U-G-Z. Back to you, Bob.
And Julia Asante is an established social historian. She received her doctorate from Columbia University in archaeology and art history of the ancient Near East. She's given talks at major universities and conferences in the United States and Europe, and she's written numerous scholarly articles. In addition to her academic pursuits, she's been an active professional intuitive. And in her book, The Last Frontier, Exploring the Afterlife and Transforming Our Fear of Death, she applies the insights and methodologies gained from both fields in order to present a uniquely rigorous investigation of where we go after we die. Her website is juliaasante.com, And Asante is spelled A-S-S-A-N-T-E. Welcome, Dr. Asante.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you, Bob.
And a pleasure to have you. So here you are. You're immersed in the world of academia, and I'm wondering what the reaction of your academic colleagues was when they learned you're writing a book about death and the afterlife.
Well, it's been quite a secret.
Yeah.
But most of them know by now, and I don't hear anything from them. Only one actually has written me back.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, we're in a pre-biblical, parabiblical field, yeah? It's all the stuff that comes before the writing of the Bible and around the writing of the Bible. And we're working constantly with pre-Judaic and pre-Christian rituals and all kinds of stuff, the original flood stories. And you would think we would take some of this stuff a little bit more seriously. But it's all treated like quaint artifacts. Rituals, initiations, after-death communication, the viewing of auras that the Mesopotamians wrote about, it's all considered nonsense, something to be studied and maybe written about but not taken seriously.
Yeah. Well, did that spur your interest in the afterlife, or was this something that you pondered, early in life as a child?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it started at birth, really.
Yeah.
I was born in severe deep mourning, and I think that was I've been set up for this for quite a long time.
Yeah. Are you surprised that as you did a lot of research for the book, were you surprised at the number of people who are fearful? I mean, not only about death, of course, but about all psi phenomena. There seems to be this stigma of fear. I guess it's not helped by the media. But were you surprised at the sheer number of people that have these fears?
Not at all. In fact, it's gotten much better. When I was starting out in the mid-70s as a professional intuitive, it was almost impossible to tell people that's what I did unless they were already within that circle. I was considered very rational, but in this area, insane. And so I've been, I'm used to that. And it's incredibly frustrating. And the evidence, as you say, Dean Radin, has consolidated all of this. There's evidence for all of this stuff over and over and over again. And it's just bad attitude, ideology that won't let us embrace it. When you really look at after-death communication, how many people are doing it already, you're really looking at the mid-90%, if not higher. And I'm finding also that the kind of work that I'm doing now could never have been done in the 70s, the 80s, or even most of the 90s. People have a real hunger to learn how to communicate, real hunger to learn about the afterlife. This is something that we didn't talk about 10 years ago, really.
Yeah.
It's mainly from near-death experiences that's broken the ice on this. It's given it, legitimized it. But at the same time, there's more than just a near-death experience picture. This is not the only voice that we should be listening to.
So you do see a shift in consciousness that's taking place. I mean, you mentioned you see a lot more people are receptive to the idea of survival now. So do you think we're making gains in that respect?
Oh, 100%. Not only are they receptive, but they all seem to be getting it and being able to do it in the first shot. I haven't been with anyone yet. I don't care what generation they are, or their belief systems. If they come to me for a workshop or private sessions or whatever, not one of them has failed to make after-death communication real for them.
Mm.
And that, to me, is stunning. That is stunning.
Yeah, it is.
The abilities coming out, they're all there, they're all natural, and people seem to be just allowing them to happen now. And a lot of this, Bob, is coming from the way technology is training us, actually. And we, the invention of the telephone for the first go-around, the most important in this whole process, the communicating of a disembodied voice at a distance. And when Alexander Graham Bell introduced the telephone in public, he used Hamlet's soliloquy, the one where you talk to a skull.
Right.
As his demonstration. And and it's been going on since then.
Yeah. Well, I would think sometimes I wonder, you know, how we're becoming so much more receptive to it, because with the advent of the internet, with this instant information available, people, I would think, you know, they don't rely on their own innate abilities as much, you know, because they're constantly online and getting the information that way. So you would think that we'd be moving away from our recognizing our roots, but it seems to be the opposite.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I have a little tiny story about that. I went to my favorite psychic. She's in the book, Stefania Gorka, and she told me that in the next coming months I was going to be involved very, very heavily with chat rooms. And I thought, no, this is not possible. I have still yet today never been on a chat room or involved in one. And what it actually was, this is a highly trained psychic, the daughter of two professional psychics, trained since she was 13, never missed with me, and she missed this time because the analogy is so strong. Instead of chat rooms, I had enormous amount of after-death communication during that time. So that's how it even looks. It looks on the inside, you know, from the inner dimensions, they look that similar.
Yeah, I could. Yes, you're. Everybody works with symbols, it seems. That's a perfect symbol. What do you think is more important in changing worldview? Is it scientific research, or is it ultimately personal experience that's going to change worldview?
I think personal experience is gaining ground. Certainly, individual voices. Look at what science already has told us, that there's almost nothing we can identify as matter. If someone took all of the space out of your atoms, Bob, you'd be reduced. The amount of matter would be reduced to a very tiny microscopic dot. And that sort of idea hasn't really taken hold. So I'm wondering even if science could prove survival after death, if people really would pay attention, or just be a small group of people like you and like myself who already know that there's almost no difference between us and the dead other than this microscopic dot. I think if science does prove it and people are waiting, it'll take a long time for that to come out, and maybe a generation or two before it starts to trickle into the popular imagination.
Mm. You know, I'm sure you've heard it a million times, both from both perspectives. You know, as an academic and also as an intuitive, where people say to you, "Well, why do you talk about communication with the dead? I mean, if you do that, you're holding them back." You know, the thought that what are your thoughts on that? What do you say to people?
First of all, we don't have the power to hold them back.
Yeah.
Any more than we have the power to stop them from dying. Second of all, they have choice. And third of all, many, many, many of them are desperate to make contact. And the idea of not recognizing them when they try to get our attention, whether they're flickering lights or they're knocking pictures off the wall, sending us strange odors or whatever they're doing and try to get our attention, when we dismiss them, think of what we're actually dismissing, their very existence. And that, to me, is an enormous dishonor.
Mm. So, you mentioned Dean Radin before, and there are many other scientists and parapsychologists that are conducting research. But as a whole, although, as you hinted at before, a lot of the physicists now are sounding spiritual in nature as they examine, you know, the quantum world. What's holding the scientific community back from recognizing the evidence that's out there? Is it fear?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, they're still materialist-oriented, right?
Yeah.
However, I think, in my view, during the atomic age, they took science took a very stiff stance against religion. And the linchpin of religion is, of course, an afterlife. And so the whole, as they threw the baby out, they also, the bathwater out, they also threw out the baby. Actually, I shouldn't have said that, perhaps, because the religion really is worth more than the bathwater. But if you understand my meaning, the whole thing was removed, and they had an ideology against religion, which they're still holding on to.
Yeah, in your studies, I mean, you recognized early on that there are you know, many ancient cultures that continue, present-day cultures and religions, too, that each one seems to have their own description of what the afterlife is like. And the problem is that they're each convinced that their afterlife is the only true afterlife. And that's the problem, isn't it?
I think, to some degree, that problem is still continuing, even in afterlife research. There's certain areas of research where it's claimed that their view is the only view. And I think why my particular academic background helps. I only look at the evidence. I look at what's in front of me. I recognize that what's in front of me is culturally influenced, and I treat it as such, so that my descriptions of the afterlife, I have many, many of them. There's not just one, but I understand that I am writing about modern Western humans, and that even with near-death experiences, they change by culture, they change by time, and we have to grapple with this and not try to fix the afterlife as a place as it has been historically fixed. This would be the worst direction to go in.
Absolutely. You know, and in the process of communicating, you know, with spirit and mediumship, I mean, do you consider the telepathy to be the all-encompassing term of how it takes place? Is it mind-to-mind communication, even though one person doesn't have a body anymore? I mean, when you receive information, you receive it telepathically?
I consider telepathy as more than mind-to-mind. I understand telepathy as even interaction of thought forms, so that more or less opens it up to almost all activity. And yes, it definitely is telepathic, and yes, everybody is telepathic. We wouldn't have culture without telepathy, right? There wouldn't be change without telepathy. We even know that plants have it. Certainly we have it. Every day we use it.
And how do you, I mean, a lot of people, you know, as you know, they argue against the afterlife or communication with the dead with the super psi hypothesis, and we know that a lot of, you know, all mediums are psychic. So how does one differentiate? I mean, how do you differentiate information that you received as whether it's coming from the dead or whether it's coming from a living person or an information field, for that matter? I mean, you're able to distinguish?
I try really hard to.
Yeah.
It's something I'm very careful about. A lot of mediumship can just be getting information about the dead person through the person who knew him or her. Yeah? And that's
or the spirit. Yeah.
I really work hard for that not to happen. I work hard to locate the dead person, or if the person is newly dead, there's no question that it's coming from them. You can see them shimmering. They give you detailed description of what happened, what they were thinking, what they were looking at the moment of death, say in an accident or in drowning. In particular, I'm thinking of, it went on for an entire hour. The elation, the fear, the attempt to touch the person, which the person corroborated, they felt that, that is not super psi. In understanding, it's not two living systems in telepathic connection.
Mm-hmm.
It is two living systems, although one doesn't have a body. And that's not part of the psi theory.
Yeah, I always thought it was somewhat incongruous when you talk about this information field or the super psi, how I could reason how you can extract, you know, bits of information, but how do you extract personality?
How do you argue or make jokes?
Yeah, right.
Information fields are not set up for that type of interaction, and that happens in after death communication. It certainly happened with me in extended hour long communications, or I'm told to do things or what's going to happen and, you know, comforted or whatever, but also argument, dialogue, that, to me, excludes the idea of an information field.
Mm. You had a wonderful quote in the book, in The Last Frontier, and when you were talking about the obstacles that mediumship has faced over the years, you wrote, Yet no amount of law, religious injunction, scientific denial, or popular derision seems to be able to stop mediumship. I like that. Well, and why do you think that is?
Because the need is there. It's a vital need because we know it can happen, we can do it, but we only allow it for certain people. You know, you have to understand that we come from an Abrahamic religion. We are in an Abrahamic religion, whether it's Judaism, Islam, or Christianity. And in around 700 B.C., having communication with the dead was punishable by death by stoning. I don't need to go into why that happened, but nevertheless, it did happen. Necromancy is what it was regarded as, and we still have this stigma.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the book, I mean, I don't know if you mentioned this specifically, but it was clear that you grew up in a family that believed in the concept of, that a lot of people believe in, a heaven and a hell and a purgatory, but you mentioned that your intuition told you otherwise. I mean,
yeah.
Do you think that in today's society that many people are conflicted in that way? I mean, they're conflicted between what they were taught and what they know?
Yeah, I do. I think intuitively, the intuitive is stronger, and it's the intuitive one that wins out after one dies. But there are people who rigidly stick to what they were taught and can be very angry when they go over to find out that what they were taught is actually not what is.
Mm. What about the judgment piece? You know, a lot of people have this vision that they're going to go before a deity who's going to pass judgment and send them to a place. I take it that you agree that the only judgment that takes place in the afterlife is self-judgment? Or would you not?
You know what? I would go further. I would say, really, it's self-forgiveness. Mm. I mean, you can even skip the judgment. If you don't even have to do that.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is certainly the whole of the law. I think the notion of judgment, first of all, that's a very new notion. That's something that didn't develop until quite late. It wasn't even in Judaism at all, and afterlife judgment, until only in apocalyptic sects. And in those, there was a judgment, but it was a judgment that happened at the end of days. So this notion of being judged by a god on a throne is a concoction that happened after the time of Christ. Believe me. The whole notion of sin is something that you can date maybe to maybe the 5th century B.C. This is all new stuff, and in a lot of ways, it's a great, great tragedy. In more traditional societies, people slipped from this world to a better world. Everyone went to it. Everyone had eternity. And we see this in the Native American traditions and many in Africa. Certainly ancient Mesopotamia have that. And the original Judaism, the original Shoal. But it was all eventually knocked out as the religion became more centralized and took on the responsibility or the authority of what happens after you die. Mm-hmm. And as that happened, it was used more and more as a threat. As a revenge mechanism, people become terribly upset at the idea that nobody really pays.
Right.
And, this is an eye for an eye kind of mentality. And so far, that kind of moral policing simply hasn't worked. It hasn't worked in all the history that we know, and it probably won't work in the future either. There's no reason to believe that it can. But forgiveness will lead to authentic remorse and morality, and that's a whole different ballgame.
What does the concept of karma fit in? I mean, I guess if you believe in reincarnation, then believing in karma, makes sense. You know, we come back to balance things out. I mean, what are your thoughts on karma and reincarnation?
Well, not only do I have my own thoughts, and also from experiences of people who are in the afterlife and joining with other incarnational selves, future and past. But I also have research on my side from Ian Stevenson, the greatest of all reincarnation researchers from the University of Virginia, now unfortunately passed. And others who have conducted trials with maybe 1,000 people doing incarnations or memory. And none have so far uncovered any evidence for karma or karmic debt.
Yeah, that was interesting. I did read that in the book, and you know, I read a lot of Stevenson's work, but I'd never really put two and two together that you really don't see that in all of his accounts. So that was a surprise.
It is. Yeah. It's a surprise that it's backed up by the material evidence. And from my view, how could there be karmic debt? This is all simultaneous. If you are doing a reward and punishment system, you have to be in a cause and an effect universe, and we're not. This is all coming from the inner dimensions. All these incarnations are issuing out in simultaneous time. I've been in touch with future ones of mine.
We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about that. We're talking with Dr. Julia Asante. Her book, The Last Frontier, Exploring the Afterlife and Transforming Our Fear of Death. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death, and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death.
For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Julia Asante. This show is sponsored by Hugs from Heaven, and they can be found on the web at hugsfromheaven.com. Hugs is spelled H-U-G-Z. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. If you have been tuning in and helping us out, we thank you. You know that we are 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, and it takes a lot of money to do the work that we do. And we know that not everyone has the extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So I'm going to once again let everyone know this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you're looking for in their more than 900 online stores that you're very familiar with, like the Apple Store, Expedia, Lord & Taylor, even Marriott, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our last night's event, 12-12-12, was a wonderful success yesterday. We thank our four extraordinary mediums, Bobby Allison, Angelina Diana, Siri Bernstein, and Laura Lynn Jackson, who conducted spirit communication for a very special group at Long Island University CW Post Campus in Brookville, New York. Thank you all, and thank everybody for attending. Our last event of the year, Holidays Past, was held in four locations. There's one left with the Afterlife medium, Suzanne Northrup, in Melville, New York. You can reserve those seats on the Forever Family Foundation website on the event page. And we're looking forward to seeing everybody at this very last event of the year. Before we draw our five winners for a Holidays Past raffle on December 23rd. So if you have not yet purchased your chances to win a medium reading with one of these five certified mediums, Amy Utzman, Tracy Lee Nash, Nancy Marlowe, Ginger Quinlan, and Eliza Ray. Go on to the website and get the information on purchasing your raffle ticket. And I think those are all of our updates right now. We're back to you, Bob.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Julia Asante, the author of The Last Frontier, Exploring the Afterlife and Transforming Our Fear of Death. You know, I don't want to make sure we don't run out of time, and I want to mention I don't get excited about books too often, but this book, The Last Frontier, is extremely well-written and informative, and it's definitely a winner. So if you're looking to add a book to your collection, it is called The Last Frontier, and there is a link on an Amazon link on our website if you wanted to purchase that book. Dr. Asante, we were talking a little bit about reincarnation. So assuming we have past lives, a lot of people, they say, well, I don't know, we can't possibly have past lives because we don't remember them. We certainly would remember them. And you made an excellent point in the book, is that, hell, you know, people, how many people can remember their early childhood? I can't. You know, so if I can't remember my childhood, how the heck am I going to remember my past lives? Do you think we make a mistake by discounting past lives simply because we don't remember them?
Well, it's really easy to remember them. And it's just a part of your superconscious bank. And just shifting your awareness there, a lot of these incarnations will come up spontaneously. If we did remember them, can you imagine how this world would change?
Mm.
If we knew that we were another race, another sex, another socioeconomic category, there would be... And we wouldn't worry so much about becoming rich, you know, or heaping up, or living long, or whatever it is. Everything would change. Sometimes the psychological problems or physical problems could be discovered and worked through via past life. There's so much liberation to be had once we start to embrace this in a real way, not in the way that they've been traditionally taught as karmic and karmic debt and hierarchies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You get into the nature of time, which you also alluded to a little bit earlier. And so, I mean, it's your feeling that the past, present, and future might well be coexisting. So things like deja vu might be, you know, some time loop that takes place.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
And that seems to be what some scientists are telling us today.
Yes, yes, it's coming.
Yeah.
And they're very preoccupied with finding arrows of time, as they call it, where we can distinguish the past from the future, which physics certainly has not been able to describe yet. But there are theories of all time being adjacent and all existing at once.
Mm.
And I think we're also beginning to see more and more that what we understand as distance, which is, you know, closely related to time, space-time continuum idea, is really more of a perceptual thing. Not quite as real as we think it is.
Mm. You talk about a technique in the book, a technique of how we could fast forward to the last moments in the body. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I do this routinely in workshops. I call it living your death, or it's a way of preparing for conscious death. Basically, if you want to do it alone at home, anyone who's listening, you just lie down, relax, and allow yourself to drift into your last moments. And from that deathbed scene, you will, if you have the courage, the relaxation, the trust, you'll be able to see what you've done with your life, what you had, what you were born with, how you use them or did not use them, and why. That's one of the most important aspects of this exercise. Working with a friend is helpful also to keep you a little bit more anchored. Most of the people I work with, no, that's not true. All the people I've worked with to date have experienced who was in the room, what the circumstances were, and leaving the body. And going into this kind of peaceful, sometimes astonished peacefulness. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but that's exactly the way it's often described. And looking back down on the body and floating further away into a kind of what I would call presence, a kind of knowing luminosity. And that's just the beginning stages. So most of the people doing this privately can experience the phases of looking back at your life to see where your strengths and weaknesses were, where you failed to take advantage and fulfill yourself out of fear or anger or whatever it was, and then to move forward, both your life circumstances at the end, what physical condition you're dying from, who's there, who's not there, and why. And all of these things can be changed from the point of view of now. The future is just a probability, and it can all be changed. So it's astonishing how much people can get out of this exercise and how infinitely accessible it is to do.
Hmm. So when people have precognitive dreams, they can possibly change the course of events.
Absolutely. Yeah. As you can even working through lucid dreaming.
Mm.
Yeah. In fact, that's what we do with so much of our dreaming. We are trying out different futures, different probabilities, and choosing which ones we're going to bring into so-called physical reality.
Mm.
It's always in the planning stage, Bob. Always.
The evidence, I'm jumping around a lot, and I'm doing that because we have time constraints. There's so much information that you have, and I want to get it out there. But deathbed visions, we certainly suggest that we all have help when we cross over. So the people in spirit know when their loved ones in the physical are about to die?
Absolutely. It's amazing how they know what they know. They know so much. They're, you know, if you even with near-death experiences or people who are just doing out-of-body practices, and a lot of people do that, and it's deliberate, not spontaneous. Once you get out of the body, all of your facilities are tremendously expanded. Your sight becomes 360 degrees. Your sense of time is so expanded and so flexible that you can look at any quadrant of time. Mobility issues, all of this kind of stuff has just become impossibly expanded. Therefore, with this expanded consciousness, what's going on with us is rather precise and simple for them to access. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people talk about the freedom of losing those physical constraints and no longer being subject to the physical known laws.
Yeah. Really, what we don't hear enough of from mediums or even afterlife encounters is how spectacular their vision becomes. And some of them don't even, not only their vision, but all of their senses. I don't know so much about smell, but I know some of them sense smells, so there must be something there. Vision is senses that are synesthetic. In other words, that they're you see light, but you hear light, that sort of thing. And I have had experiences of people who have died showing me how I look, and that is a knockout because I'm not even human in form. I'm an electrical rock. I'm electrical. So, yeah, the whole thing just shifts around and becomes, as I said, impossibly beyond what we understand as our capability.
Mm. I know we're coming to the end of our time, but a lot of people ask right after physical death, is there a period of confusion? I mean, we're kind of bewildered. We don't really know what's going on.
Astonishment, yes. Engagement with the process, yes, but there are some people who are really in trouble and some people who create delusions and they get trapped in them, and that's just the truth. I'm not a restless soul person or earthbound spirit person. I hate all those theories, but there really are a number of people who go over badly or in denial or with guilt or whatever it is, and they have significant problems afterwards. In our terms, these problems can last for centuries until they become open to help. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, most of them have not been able to refocus to the non-physical. They're sort of stuck between not really being able to focus to the physical nor the non-physical. And so, therefore, they get into a kind of in-between zone where it's not easy to penetrate.
And one of the advantages of preparing and fast-forwarding, as you say, to gain some insights. We have been talking with Dr. Julia Asante. The book is called The Last Frontier, Exploring the Afterlife and Transforming Our Fear of Death. Her website is juliaasante.com. It's Julia, J-U-L-I-A, and Asante, A-S-S-A-N-T-E.com. Dr. Asante, thank you so much for being with us, and we really hope you'll join us again.
I hope so, too.
Okay, well, thank you, and have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Right. Yeah, bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy for more participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Alex, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Barbara Patillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, CJ, Eileen Lafada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, Nancy Scheel, Barbara Russell, Diane Archangel, Paul Smith, Kate Torpy, Angelina Diana, Deb Martin, Tina Diana Jocelyn, Jerry Diana, DeLeon family, and Tim Donahue. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken by the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.